Corinthians chapter 18, verse number 41. If we look at verse number 40 of this chapter, Krishna mentioned that there is no being on earth or in heaven and who is free from these three qualities, meaning the three gunas, sattvic, rajasic and tamasic. Therefore, it means that all of us here have these three gunas in us. And therefore, based on these three gunas, in verse 41, Krishna said, he has divided the whole of humanity. According to the gunas, we should take up the right line of work. Following our inherent nature, we should follow that line of work. And why we should do that is going to explain. Thus he said, all humanity can be divided into four categories, the Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas and Sudras. Now in the next few verses, he is going to give us an example of the type of duties each type of class of being can take up. And then later he will tell us why we should follow our inherent nature and take up those duties. So now, in this verse 42, first he is going to talk about the nature of a Brahmin. Again, we must understand a Brahmin or whatever class of work we take up is not determined by which family we are born to, but it follows our own individual nature. And for all the four classes, you will find there are various scriptures that give us a list of its duties. You will find in the Mahabharata also, and in one particular text known as the Vasishta Smriti, which is a dialogue by sage Vasishta, he mentions there that the Brahmin has six duties. What are the six duties? One is study. So study, anybody who is inclined to attaining knowledge. Number two, teaching that knowledge. Number three, performance of sacrifice for oneself. So there are certain type of prayers and rituals a Brahmin does for himself. Four, performance of sacrifice for others also. He performs prayers for other people also, rituals. Five, giving of charity also. And how a Brahmin is supposed to give charity? Because his sixth characteristic is he is allowed to accept gifts. Thus a Brahmin can accept gifts and he can, or rather he must, share that with society also. Whereas a Vaishya cannot receive gifts, he is only supposed to give, not receive. So those are the six duties of a Brahmin. Kshatriyas, according to Vasishta, has got three duties. Duties of a Kshatriya are also to study, perform sacrifices with charity and arm protection of the subjects. These are the three duties of a Kshatriya. Vaishya's three duties are cultivation, trade, animal husbandry and usury, meaning money lending. So that, money lenders, that all falls under Kshatriya. And Shudra's duty is to serve the other three classes. That is their duty, they have to serve the other three classes. Now in this verse, Krishna is going to give us nine qualities of a Brahmana or Brahmin. That means if we have these nine qualities, we qualify to be called a Brahmin. And what are the qualities? Number one is Samaha. Samaha means the control, or one who has control or discipline over the internal organs. One who is a master of his or her mind. That means basically a mind that is introvert, not a mind which is constantly running after the world. Such a person who has this samaha, discipline, control of the mind, an introvert mind, that is the first quality of a Brahmin. Second is Dhammaha. Dhammaha refers to control of the external organs, the five senses. And generally the five senses, they are called Indriyas. And another meaning for Indriyas is tentacles, because the senses like to run outwards to contact. Eyes like to see nice form, ears like to hear nice music, etc., etc. But a Brahmin is one who has a total discipline or control over all his or her five senses, and is able. These five senses are under his control, not by forceful withdrawal, but by what we call as viveka. Viveka means by an intelligent understanding of the world. What is the intelligent understanding? The world cannot give you permanent happiness. With that understanding, a Brahmin is able to control or discipline his five senses also. And if you remember the whole chariot allegory, this whole thing, you know, makes so much of sense. The horses being the five senses, the reins being the mind, and that mind, the reins are handed over to the intellect. Thus, the intellect must control the mind must control the senses. So, control of mind is samaha, control of senses is dhammaha. Both should be controlled by the higher intellect or buddhi. The next quality is tapaha, which we have discussed, is called austerity. We have discussed this extensively in chapter 17, verses 14, 15 and 16, where we discuss austerity of the body, austerity of the speech and austerity of the mind. So austerity must be practiced at all the three levels also. And what does austerity mean actually? What do you mean by austerity? What is the meaning, the real meaning of austerity?
Give up something.
To give up something that... What do you give up?
Addiction.
Give up whatever you are addicted to. So whatever you have an addiction to, you start first by fixing one day of the week and saying, for that day I will not indulge in that. That is called austerity, right? So that is austerity at all the three levels. Saucham, purity, maintaining cleanliness again at all three levels. Keeping the environment clean, wearing clothes that are clean, and always keeping the body also clean. And this also includes cleanliness, saucham also includes our constant vigilance of our words and our thoughts. A Brahmin is one who is constantly vigilant that no negative thoughts are entering his mind. And he is also constantly vigilant of the words he is using also. Doesn't use harsh words, impolite words, hurtful words also. So purity again at all levels. Shanti. Shanti means forgiveness. Having that patience or tolerance, especially when very easy to practice shanti now, but when is the most difficult to practice shanti?
When you're provoked, exactly.
When people are hurling abuses, insulting you, at that time you have this capacity to forgive and forget. That is the quality of a Brahmin, one of the very difficult qualities. Arjavam, straightforwardness, meaning harmony in thoughts, words and actions. So leading a very dharmic life, harmony or alignment of our thoughts, words and actions also, which we have discussed also in chapter 13 also. Jnanam. Jnanam means knowledge. One who is constantly engaged in getting or attaining knowledge. So one who has an interest in knowledge. And this means both actually spiritual and worldly knowledge. So Jnanam means one who is constantly involved in the study of books to attain knowledge. And not only just attaining the knowledge, but because he has to teach this knowledge, the next quality he must have is Vijnanam. Vijnanam means wisdom. How does wisdom come? How do you attain wisdom? Many people have knowledge, but very few people have wisdom. Reflecting on the knowledge. Mananam. So if you want to gain wisdom, it's not only listening, but you have to reflect constantly on this knowledge so that you absorb this knowledge. And that's what is called as wisdom also. Vijnanam, wisdom. And in that way, once you absorb the knowledge, then you are qualified to teach the knowledge or share the knowledge. And finally, the last quality is Astikyam. Astikyam means having faith. Faith is very, very important. Faith in yourself, faith in God, faith in your teacher, and faith in what? Faith in the scriptures also. Right? So, complete faith, unshaken faith, that is Astikyam. And Krishna says, therefore, he concludes after giving all his qualities in the last line, Brahma Karma. Karma means these are the duties, the nine duties of who? A Brahmin. Brahma Karma. And how do you ascertain which is Brahma Karma? He says it is Swabhavaja. So Swabhava means your nature, which is born, inherent in you. It is not something that you inherit by being born in a family of Brahmins, but it is your natural inclination. So if you have natural inclination, if you are an introvert, you are constantly controlling or disciplining your senses and your mind, you are interested to acquire knowledge and teach knowledge, by that very nature, you will be called a Brahman.
Does this mean that you cannot nurture yourself? You can either born with the qualities or you can never nurture.
You see, when we say natural qualities, it means you can change. But if you are born into that family, then even if you change, you can't do anything.
But this is born for some
reason,
it's a birth with it.
Yeah, so when we are born, we have certain gunas, right? But that gunas can change. So that even if you are born in a family of Kshatriyas, your gunas change, you can become a Brahmana. So the gunas are subject to change. Whereas the family that we are born with, we cannot do anything about it. So that what it means is, you have the freedom to change. You are not bound by your family lineage. So if it is your nature to acquire knowledge, then by that nature you are called a Brahmana. And you can change also. Your nature can change. Your inclination can change based on your actions, based on your experiences, based on the type of people you meet, your nature can change. Right? But the idea to give here is that it is not a fixed thing that if you are born in this family, you are like that. You can change. The freedom lies with you. Okay? And then you should follow that nature also. Your inclination, where it's leading you to, you should follow that also.
Yeah, the Vinambamalis say that so and so is born, the guru, praise the guru, he is born in the lineage of, for example, Bharat Vacha, who is a great sage. So he, from that lineage he came, so he has all that quality.
Yes, if you are born in that, and if again it is your natural inclination, like not necessarily you are born in that, that you might find that not interesting, you might go off somewhere else also. So by your nature, you take up the work, by that work you are called a Brahmin or a Kshatriya or a Vaishya. Right? Now, verse 43, seven qualities of a Kshatriya. Again, Kshatriya is one who is a ruler, that means one who is in administration, politics, engaged in maintenance of law and order in society, and to protect and uphold dharma. So what is the nature of such a person? The very first quality, of course, is saurya, which means heroism, to the tendency to take on battle with those who are more stronger than you. Because in order to protect dharma, in order to maintain law and order, you have to have that capacity of heroism to challenge anyone who is stronger also than you. So that is the first quality, saurya. Tejaha. Tejaha means having the power of not being, threatened or being cowed by any enemy. So no matter who the enemy is, you are not threatened and feel weak because of that enemy. So Tejaha means having that brilliance, that power also. Dhriti, fortitude, which is very important, perseverance. Your determination to carry out all your duties in the face of any adversity, you have that fortitude or perseverance or willpower to carry out all your duties, come what may. Daksham. Daksham means capability. See, an administrator must know how to use the resources he has for the benefit of the people. So one must have that kind of, capability to plan. There are certain resources you have, like water, like electricity, etc., land. How do you use these resources for the benefit of the people? So daksha means the capability to utilize resources for the benefit of others. That is one of the qualities of a kshatriya also. And this one is for Arjuna specifically, that is apalayanam. Apalayanam, which means not retreating from yuddha, from battle, not running away from any battle. So when dharma needs to be protected, when adharma needs to be destroyed, it is a kshatriya's duty to even fight and give up his life and not run away. And this is specifically what Krishna is trying to tell Arjuna, is one of the duties of a kshatriya, not to run away from battle. Next quality is dhanam, generosity. So generosity, because why? In the ancient times, it was the kings who had their wealth to give to their subjects. They had land, they had gold, they had diamonds, they had money. So they were supposed to use the wealth not for their enjoyment, but to use the wealth to uplift the society. So that's why dhanam was one of the very important qualities of a kshatriya, because they had the wealth in their hands and they were not supposed to keep it, but use it for the welfare of the subjects. So today's times also, no doubt the politicians may not have dhanam, but whatever they gather through taxes, they are supposed to use it for the benefit and upliftment of society, not to enrich themselves. So dhanam also is another very important quality, to channel that money in the right direction. Ishvara bhava. Ishvara bhava means lordliness, or using one's power. When you're sitting in a position of power, when you have that authority, to use that power for the protection of the subjects, for protection of society. Do not abuse that power to destroy people, but use that power to protect dharma, to protect the subjects. So Ishvara bhava, that is another quality of a kshatriya. One who does this, you see again, one who abuses that power, you can't call him a kshatriya. Just because he is sitting in that position of power, but he abuses that power, by that means he doesn't have the nature of a kshatriya. So you can't call him a kshatriya. So all these are inborn nature. I have the power, I'm sitting in the seat of position, I use that power for the welfare of people, to help people, not to destroy people. So again, Krishna concludes the same thing, what he concluded for Brahma Karma. Here he says, in the fourth line, Kshatram Karma, the duties of a Kshatriya are all again what? Swabhavaja, born of his very natural inclination of a human being. So if you have that interest to serve society, to maintain law and order, to use power to uplift people, then you are following the duties. You have the inclination of a Kshatriya, therefore you should take up the duties of a Kshatriya. And an example also is given to us to tell us about this, that one should not take a family birth as your profession. If you look at the example of Vishwamitra, Vishwamitra, you all know, is famous for what? Gayatri Mantra. He is the one who received the Gayatri Mantra. And he was born in a family of what?
King.
He was a Kshatriya. But he had the nature of a Brahmana. So later he became a sage. He took up the duties of a Brahmin and he was renowned as a sage. So this, and there are many examples given in the various scriptures, how people were born in a certain family, but they took up another profession because of their own inclinations also. Vishwamitra is one of the examples. Now, verse 44, three duties of a Vaishya and Sudra, only one duty only. So both these Vaishya and Sudra are explained in verse number 44. Vaishya basically is an activity that results in the production of goods and creation of wealth. So again, the scriptures never look down upon wealth. But what the scriptures are against is what? They are not against wealth, but what are they against? Hoarding of wealth. Hoarding of wealth for selfish purposes. That's why there is a saying, you know, manure, right? The fertilizer. If you accumulate it in one place, what happens? That's a foul smell. But if you take the same manure and you spread it all over the agricultural field, what happens? It nourishes the plants, it creates productivity. So manure, wealth is compared to manure. If you hoard the wealth, money in one place, it begins to smell, meaning it causes you to create more sin. Whereas you take that money and you share it with others, it purifies your wealth. So dhanam is a way to purify our wealth. So here again, the duty of a Kshatriya is what? First is Krishi, K-R-S-I. See, the words are all joined together, so you have to break them up. K-R-S-I, Krishi, means agriculture. Those who are involved in producing the food, farming. So Krishi means basically agriculture or farming. And then the second one is Gau Raksham. Gau means cow, so this means anyone who was involved in the rearing of cattle, that also is the duty of a Kshatriya also. So Gau Raksham, and then of course Gau Raksham, not to Raksham, you see the word Raksham comes in, meaning what? Protection, the one who protects the cows, not who slaughters the cows. So Gau Raksha means one who protects the cows and therefore sells the milk of the cows and churns the butter and all that, not who sells meat. So Gau Raksha, we must understand very carefully. Raksha means one who protects the cows. Okay? And Vanijam, so Rishi, Gau Raksha, Vanijam. Vanijam means occupation of trading. Any form of trading whereby you buy and sell goods, and it includes during those times money lending also, because the Vaishyas were involved in money lending also. So any form of trading, it falls under Vanijam, where there is purchasing and selling of goods also. Again he says what? Vaishya Karma Swabhavajam. These are the duties of a Vaishya born of his own nature. So one who takes to buying and selling goods, one who takes to money lending, one who takes to agriculture, etc., all this is based on the nature of a person, and by that nature the person is called a Vaishya. What are the duties of a one thing is that we must understand the difference with the unique point about the Vaishyas is that they earn wealth, but they were supposed to use this wealth also to share with society also. But a person who earns the wealth only to enrich himself for selfish purposes, such a person cannot be called a Vaishya also. So the purpose was to earn wealth to share also with society also. Okay, what is the duty now of a Shudra? Shudra in the third line, Paricharyat Makam. Paricharyat Makam means service, to be in the service of the other three classes. Those who serve the Brahmanas, the Kshatriyas, the Vaishyas, that means those who supply the labor and the manpower. So this is also due to that own nature, subhava of the person. Because if that person is not inclined to knowledge, he is not inclined to, he doesn't have that capability of heroism to be a protection of law and order. He doesn't have the capability to go into business, to earn money, etc. Then he falls under the fourth category, which is basically a Sudra, which means to serve the other three classes. So again, it is not that they are looking down upon the Sudra class, but basically, if you look at the whole society, we need all these four classes of people for the whole, society to function. Any one part of these four classes does not function, there is a breakdown. If Kshatriya doesn't do the work, breakdown of law and order. If a Brahmin doesn't do his work, there is no imparting of knowledge. So everybody, even the Shudra, today plays the most important role. Like for example, the domestic maid, or the security guards, or the delivery dispatch riders, all these play a very important role. Everybody has got to do their role in society. So all this is based on the gunas. Second, we must also not forget that our duties also change according to our stages of life. So we must also not only just follow the gunas also, but the second thing also, we must look at our stage of life. And that's why we are given also the four ashramas also. So therefore, as a, what is the first ashrama? The brahmacharya. As a brahmacharya also, we have different duties. What are the duties of a brahmacharya? If I am a student, what are my duties?
Study.
Conserve my energy, don't waste my energies in wasteful material and sensual pursuits. Conserve the energy and focus on my studies. Then when we come to the, Grihastha, the family life, then my duties again change. Then I have a responsibility to a spouse, to children, etc., to earn money, to serve society. And later when I go to the third stage, Vanaprastha, then my actions reduce and I spend more time to develop my own inner self. And then finally, of course, is sannyas. So one is taking up duties according to the gunas, the other is taking up your duties according to your stage in life. One must concentrate on that. Now that Krishna has given us all the duties of the four classes, he wants to explain why we should follow according to our gunas also. And here in verse 45 he explains that. Yes. Sure.
If like Ramana, if you consider him as a Brahmana or a Kshatriya?
See, Ramana, Ravan. Ravan was a Kshatriya. Because he was a king of a kingdom, Sri Lanka and all that. At the same time, no doubt he was endowed with knowledge also. But he didn't use his knowledge in the right way also. So, In fact, by his occupation you can call him a Kshatriya, but he did not do the duties of a Kshatriya because he did not use his powers to help people. On the contrary, he ended up destroying people. Correct. He was very well versed on the scriptures, but sorry? No, you see, a person, okay, I'll look at it this way. A person can take up the study of the scriptures, okay, well versed on the scriptures, but I use my knowledge to earn money. Now what am I? Am I a Brahmin or am I a Vaishya? What was the purpose for me to take up the study of scriptures? To earn money. Whereas a Brahmin takes up the study of scriptures for the love of sharing knowledge. Of course, he gets money in some way, but that is not his intention. So, it all depends on the gunas of a person. Again, if I am a politician, I am in politics, but I use my power to enrich myself. So, am I a Kshatriya or am I a Vaishya? I am a Vaishya. So, by my inclination, it shows already what type of person I am. Similarly, Ravan had that inclination, he studied the knowledge, but he never used the knowledge, he never imparted the knowledge to others. He just, in fact, what he did, he had the knowledge of the scriptures, he kept austerities in order to gain power to destroy others. So, it was for the wrong purpose. So, we can't call him a Brahmin. But by his duties, he became a Kshatriya.
Then in the case of Sri Rama,
Sri Rama.
He was Brahmin, he had all the knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
But he went into the forest and he went and fight with Ravana. So in that case, was he a Kshatriya?
No, but then he, you see, as a king also, you have that
to protect
your subjects also. So you fall under the role of a Kshatriya. Right, on a Kshatriya. No doubt, again, you have knowledge. But he was in the role of a king, an administrator, and for the protection of law and order. Whereas he did not teach knowledge. So a Brahmin is one who acquires and teaches knowledge. Right? So we have to be very careful about that. Of course, there might be a little bit of mixing
here
and there.
The
Especially
modern life, really apart from life.
Well, but you look at
the ordinary brother, the Brahmana. They really thought,
right,
and they only got what they needed to survive.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas nowadays, they acquire knowledge and
they need to earn
a living.
Yeah, to earn a living. That is true. Of course, we earn a living. But our main function, what is our main function? Like even an administrator, he also works in government. He earns money. But what is his main duty? His inherent duty is to serve the public.
And it's supposed to be.
Yeah, exactly.
Increasingly we find a church.
So that's why you see. So then we can't call the person a Kshatriya. Then we call him a Vaishya already. Because he is sitting in that position to earn money and enrich himself. So that inherent nature drives us. That's why it's very, very important that we follow that inherent nature and take up. Then that fellow should not be in politics. He should go into business. He should go into business. He should not sit in politics and abuse that power and position. Okay? So, we look at the main function of what that person is doing and what is driving his nature.
But increasingly, people are, even with so-called godmen, you know, the top societies, the collect ones, they seem to be richer than anyone ever. Mm-hmm. They seem to be, you know, they are the ones who are supposed to be teaching us knowledge. Yeah, they do, but they seem to be.
So their nature is Vaishya.
Vaishya.
Actually, their nature is Vaishya. That's it. But because they sit in politics, we cannot call them Kshatriyas if their nature is not to serve people. Right? Just
so
like.
Nothing wrong with it, right?
Sorry?
There's nothing wrong with it.
Nothing wrong with what?
Okay, you earn money. Why do you think there's. Okay, I'm a teacher. I'm teaching this.
Right.
And then I get my pay.
Fine, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Now what happens? I'm going to teach elsewhere, I get more money.
Fine, no problem. Yeah.
So now, I'm no more a Brahmana, I'm now a Vaishya, I'm doing for business. Tuition center, money extra, all that, now Vaishya already. But is it wrong
No, but don't forget, you are doing the main function of imparting knowledge, right?
Yeah.
You see, the money has to come, even to a Kshatriya, money comes, to a Vaishya, money comes. Sudra works for what? Money. So, don't look at the money aspect. We are following our natural inclination. My natural inclination is to
impart
knowledge, to gain knowledge, impart knowledge. Money will come, that is the secondary nature. But we have to look at what is my purpose of that work I am doing. Yes, of course, money is there. But am I cheating them? The purpose is, for example, if I am cheating them to earn money, then you are not thinking as a Brahmin already. Now you are thinking as a Vaishya. You see, what is your inherent nature? Is it to cheat them, to not impart the knowledge but just to extract money out of people? Then your nature becomes of a Vaishya.
Teaching well, honestly, doing
is
doing it very well.
Okay. Fine, no problem. Yeah, there's nothing wrong. That's why you're doing your duty, you're doing the right duty according to your inherent nature. What is your purpose of setting up a tuition center? To impart knowledge. That is your inherent nature. Of course, nobody is coming to the tuition center not to earn money. But
as long as you do your duty,
and don't forget, if you earn that money also, you should then also do some dana. Yeah. So scriptures are not against earning money. Scriptures are against being selfish and hoarding money. That money is a secondary aspect. So whatever we are doing, we are earning money, is fine, there's nothing wrong. But always share that money. And yes, earn money honestly and legitimately. Use that money also in an honest and legitimate way. That way your money remains pure. Okay?
So now there are priests who say, you want to
enter
this puja?
So now, is he a Brahmin or a Vaishya?
But he's not a Brahmin. He teaches you better, you put your chachana is $10, $10
is
you make a lot of difference, you know.
If his intention is to con you out of money, then what is he?
He's a Vaishya. He's useless. You have to make yourself wiser. Choices are with you. See, now that we know where we stand, we have a choice now.
But we don't really.
We don't walk his journey, we walk our own journey.
So that means you should choose your profession according to your inherent nature. Now, money is another factor I'm talking about. First of all, choose that profession according to your inherent nature. Then you will find that money becomes a secondary. But if money becomes primary, then you better choose that profession where you run after money.
But brother, I remember those days when people
what your friends are doing. What happens nowadays, you read a lot in the papers, and I've seen examples. Somebody takes up law because his father is a lawyer. Later he becomes a cook in a restaurant. He likes cooking. So many people then throws and have changed because they find their inclination is not there. I know even of one person who's studying medicine, got his degree as a doctor, but went to open a restaurant. Because he found his inclination was not medicine, his inclination was running a restaurant.
This really happened in UN. This girl did a medicine, she came back, you know, the conversation thing. She gave the degree to the father, Papa, I've done what you wanted to do, she doesn't want to practice medicine.
But had she followed her natural inclination, she wouldn't have gone.
She wouldn't have gone with it, but her father being a doctor.
He became a monk.
He became a monk.
And again, we got examples of that. Who was that sage who went to see Lord Rama's father? Was it Vashishta?
Vishwamitra,
is it? So he was doing Havan Yajna in the forest, and the demons were disturbing him. He had all the powers and the mantras to destroy them, but yet he never did that. What he did, recognizing he is a Brahmana, he should not be involved in fighting. He went to see Lord Rama's father and said, please send Rama and Lakshman to fight. He gave them the mantras, he equipped them and all the weapons. He said, you do your duty, I do my duty. I'll do my Havan Yajna, you go and fight the demons. So those days was a very clear demarcation of your duties. Whereas now, yes, there is a bit of muddle here and there.
For a long time I was wondering, why this man never used his mantras and killed the demons?
He had the power. In fact, he gave the mantras to Lord Rama. He gave them the mantras to invoke the divine weapons. He never used them because he realized he is a Brahmin. He cannot engage in the war. So that from there we learn a lot of lessons also, how everything was very well segregated. Now there is a lot of mixture.
And Lord Krishna, was he also doing that? When he was supporting Arjuna,
he was never involved in
the fighting.
But he was a Kshatriya. But he gave he said to Arjuna that he would not raise a weapon in the battle. Eventually he was forced to take up weapons. Yes, that's true.
So the Lord is also a Kshatriya.
He was a Kshatriya. He had a kingdom. He had a kingdom, he had army, soldiers, everything he had. So he was a Kshatriya. So now, what is the purpose of taking up, following our inherent needs and taking up our duty? That means if we do that, how can we convert our duty into worship? This is what Krishna wants to say. So the thing is that all our actions can be converted into worship, as long as we have the right attitude. So what is the attitude? He says, verse 45, Sve Sve Karmani. Sve Sve means your own duty according to your nature. You take up the duty according to your nature and according to your stage of life. Sva Karmanaha. Take up all your duties according to your nature and according to your stage of life. Okay? Therefore, what he is saying, do not follow your duties based on your selfish desires. Follow your inherent nature. Secondly, don't compare your duty with others. Because it always seems, see why we also change our duties? Because we think that the other person's duties look easier. When, especially Indian families, before the child is born, what is he told? Either be doctor or lawyer. Isn't it? These are the two professions of Indian. Either be doctor or lawyer. Anything else don't consider. Why? Because we feel these two professions are the ones which make the most money. Right? So the child is forced from the time he is born, either be doctor or lawyer. But then the child has got no inclination for all of this. Somebody who is scared of blood, you ask him to be a doctor. First time you extract blood, you will faint there, isn't it? So, follow our inclination. He says, and what is the reason for taking up our duties and responsibilities according to our inclination? He says, all the duties which are to be taken up, if we do it with the right attitude, brings about inner purification. So, he says here, he uses the word narha. Narha can be translated as man, but it means all human beings, narha. Because why specifically he says narha? Because all other forms of creation beside the human form cannot change their line of duty. So all the creatures are programmed to follow their own lifestyle. They cannot change. Right? Every creature besides a human being cannot change their lifestyle. So that's why he uses the word naraha. Labhate. Labhate means attains what? Samsiddhi. Samsiddhi means complete perfection. Siddhi is perfection. When the word sam is added, it means complete perfection. How? Just by following your duties according to your gunas and according to your stage of life, if you take up those duties, you will attain complete perfection. Now, what is this complete perfection? It means you will attain inner purity. So, as long as you offer, and he's going to explain that, as long as you take up all your duties offering it to the Lord, you follow your own natural inclination by the very performance. He is not talking about even prayers, doing rituals, going on pilgrimage. He is telling you just by taking up your duties in the right manner, you can attain that state of siddhi or perfection. So important it is how our daily actions can be converted into a worship of the Lord, resulting in inner purification. Whereas any duty taken up with pride, with ego, with envy, with jealousy, with anxiety will give you material growth. There is no doubt about it. But it will never give you inner purity. It will never give you spiritual upliftment. So what is the right way to approach our duties? He wants to explain. So he uses the very important word here, srunu. Srunu means listen. Because he is going to tell us now what is the right attitude to cultivate when we discharge our duties. When we take care of our family, when we go to work, whatever business we do, whether we are in the protection of law and order, whatever it is, Krishna says srunu to what? Swakarmana. How to be devoted to your duty. A person who is devoted to his duty, vindati siddhim. Vindati means achieves or attains perfection. So Krishna will say, now I am going to explain to you how by doing your duty, with what type of attitude, you will definitely attain siddhim or perfection. Now basically what he is going to explain to us is a life of karma yoga. He is presenting to us that karma yoga philosophy which was given in chapter 3. Now he is packaging it and telling us by doing our duty is karma yoga. Because what is karma yoga? Karma is right action. Yoga is right attitude. So when these two things are there in your life, right action and right attitude, the result is inner purification. So what he is talking about siddhi here is basically karma yoga. And here again is a very important message here to Arjuna, because if you go back to chapter 3 verse 1, in chapter 3 verse 1, and this chapter 3 verse 1 actually is the whole crux of the whole Bhagavad Gita. That one question that Arjuna asks, in fact the whole Bhagavad Gita is the reply to this one question from Arjuna. What is that question that Arjuna asks in chapter 3 verse 1, page 59? Krishna, if you consider knowledge superior to action, so why did Arjuna think that Krishna considers knowledge superior to action? Because in chapter 2, Krishna explained that only from knowledge you can attain state of sthita prajna. So sthita prajna means a man of steady wisdom. A person, and only a man of steady wisdom can attain moksha. So if knowledge leads me to moksha, Arjuna is asking now, if you consider knowledge superior to action, why do you urge me to do this dreadful action? Do you see the irony of Arjuna's question? What is the irony of Arjuna's question? Action, but he doesn't say action, he says karmani ghore, meaning dreadful action. So do you see the irony of Arjuna's statement? He considers his duty a dreadful action. Isn't that situation with all of us? All of us consider the duty we are doing now is the most dreadful duty. I have the most dreadful spouse. I have the most dreadful children. I have the most dreadful boss. I have the most dreadful workers. Isn't it? By doing our duty, we come into all sorts of conflicts. And we find our duty is a dreadful duty. So when does thoughts of sannyas come to us? when you find your duties painful and dreadful to do. And this is exactly Arjuna's point. He considered that by killing is a sinful, dreadful duty. Whereas what is the duty of a Kshatriya on a battlefield? He has to fight, he has to kill. But he considers that a dreadful duty. And it is the same with us. We consider all our duties as painful, dreadful, irritating. But now what Krishna wants to say, that if you have the right attitude, every duty can be converted into a worship of the Lord also. So coming back to this verse 45, how one who is dedicated or devoted to his duty can attain perfection, listen to that now. So, whatever actions we are doing, as long as you are following the injunctions of the scriptures and you perform all your duties and responsibilities, every karma can be converted to karma yoga. Karma is action. How do we convert karma into karma yoga? Work becomes worship. So two things we have to remember, because in every action there is action and there is a result. So what is our attitude first to our action, our duty? We have to have only one attitude in mind, because all the time we are performing our actions, we are doing it for who? No. Generally we do our actions, we do for who? We do for ourselves, isn't it? We are thinking that we are doing everything for ourselves. Whether we are cooking food for the family, whether we are taking care of children, whether we are working in the office, serving society. And that's why we find conflicts everywhere, because we find that everything we think we are doing for ourselves. So what should first be our attitude towards every action? That whatever you are doing is an offering to the Lord. As long as you bring this attitude to your mind, then that action is not for you. If your action now becomes an offering to the Lord.
That is the difficult part.
Correct.
Whenever we are doing for the Lord, I am doing for this.
Yeah.
Not even for me.
Yeah.
So there is
to think
that this is an offering.
So that is the first thing we want to condition our mind. All our lives we have conditioned our mind the wrong way. Now what we are trying to do? Recondition that mind now. We got to keep on reconditioning, because the moment we bring that I into the equation, then all the trouble starts. So the first thing here he wants us to do is understand, just like we go to temple, we offer flowers to the Lord, we offer fruits to the Lord. Here he's saying, if you don't have time to go temple, consider your work as a offering to the Lord. This is what you're doing, offering your work to the Lord also. And when you offer anything to the Lord, would you offer something that is spoiled or rotten?
No.
You want to always offer something that is pure. So keep your thoughts pure, do your actions as an offering to the Lord with love and devotion. Now you remove that I equation out from your life. And you have to try this. This is only theory, but you have to start putting it into practice if you want to progress spiritually. So first is, what is my attitude to my action? The second is, every action is going to produce a result. So karma phalam. Your action may be a success, your action may be a failure, people may criticize you, people may be ungrateful. You do the work in office, somebody else gets the credit and promotion. Happens or not?
Yes.
Yes, it happens. You do the work, the boss gives the credit or promotion to somebody. It happens. So always remember, if your action is being offered to the Lord, where is the result coming back from? Also from the Lord. So therefore our attitude to every result is, it is coming from the Lord. Ishvara Prasadam. Action is Ishvara Arpanam, result is Ishvara Prasadam. And why is therefore whatever I get is perfect? Why should I consider whatever? Because everything which I get, pleasant I can handle it, unpleasant I can't handle it. But how should I consider that everything that I'm getting is perfect? I get what I, the saying is, I get what I deserve, not what I desire, right? I can desire the best, but what I deserve is that. Then it is safe, you are, no matter how much hard you work, you will never get a dollar more than what you are supposed to get. If this project is going to yield you 100,000 profit, you will get 100,000. Nobody can take that away from you. And you will never get $1 less than what you are going to get. Whatever you are going to get is going to be the perfect amount of what you are supposed to get. Why? Because whatever we are getting is not only based on this life, but it is based on our actions, on our past life also. So the law of karma is perfect. The law of karma does not only consider your present life. The law of karma takes into consideration everything done in the past life. And if we believe in reincarnation, we believe that we are going through several births, then we have to understand that something we have done in the past life, that seed of that action exists. So whatever I am getting is based on the law of karma. The law of karma is a law of God, and the law of God is definitely perfect. So our attitude to whatever we receive is, it is coming from the law. And this is something we have to keep on cultivating with our mind. We have to keep on programming our mind, because our mind has been programmed the wrong way already from birth. Now we have to reprogram the mind. Every action is for the Lord, every result is from the Lord. So here he uses the words in verse 46. Who are we offering this action to? He says, Yatha pravirtir bhutana. Yatha, from who pravirtir, the origin of bhutana, the whole creation, Lord is the source of this entire creation. Not only has He created this creation, He has created certain laws in this creation. Law of gravity, where did that come from? Law of gravity also is from the Lord. The way the solar systems function, everything has been put into perfect order by the Lord. The four seasons come and go, everything has been put into perfect order by the Lord. The law of karma also has been given by the Lord. To govern this whole creation, there are certain laws. And we are in this creation, we fall under those laws. So, Lord is the very cause. Therefore, everything has a cause and everything has an effect, which is governed by the laws of God. So, who am I offering the action to? The one who has created everything. The one who has created me. The one who has created all the laws which are governing this creation. And not only is the Lord just created, but yena sarvam idam tatam. By whom? Yena, by whom? Sarvam idam, all this creation, tatam, is also pervaded by the Lord. So Lord is not someone who is sitting far away somewhere in heaven. He is very much here right now in this creation. So not only is He the origin of this creation, He is also pervading this whole creation. Now therefore, who are you offering this to? To the Lord, who is everywhere in creation. He is there with us all the time. But we don't see Him. But we have to understand He is there pervading the whole creation. So what is the rule of creation? The cause is always in the effect. Right? For example, if I say gold is the cause of ornaments, that means what? Gold is in all the ornaments. If wood is the cause of furniture, wood is in all the furniture. If God is the cause of this creation, means what? God is in the creation. Because where did this creation come from? Came from. He is the cause. So the cause is always in the effect. So He is there everywhere in creation. So, who are we offering it to? To one who has created it and to one who is in this creation also. So, the true devotee of Bhagwan realizes that what he is seeing here are just different names, forms, shapes and sizes. But the essence of this creation is the one divine or the one divinity itself. So, what do we do? Knowing that this one is the creator, that this one is pervading everywhere, what do? We offer our actions to him. How? He says, the word, if you see the third line, the word abhyarikshya. Abhyarikshya means by adoring him, by pleasing him. How do we please the Lord? So the key here is swakarmana. By the very performance of your actions, you can please the Lord, you can worship the Lord, you can adore him. Through the very performance of your action, that's all. No elaborate rituals, no prayers, no mantra chanting, nothing. Just by the simple attitude of we are offering all our actions to you, O Lord. I am doing everything for you, O Lord. Remove that I, that ego out from all your actions. You have to put this in practice. If you want to have some peace of mind, if you want to progress spiritually, you have to reprogram yourself. Understand every... You see, a very simple example. If I come here now, I give this lecture, and I think I am doing it for myself, you know. And then what happens? If I come to this lecture thinking that I am giving this lecture for myself, that I am the one giving the lecture, now what happens? If somebody comes and says, you gave a very nice lecture, what happens to me? Right. And if somebody says, sir, you wasted my 1.5 hours, totally, I'm bored, I'm not going to come back next week. What happens? You get deflated. But if you remove that I from that equation, I come here, Ishvara Arpanam, Lord, I am doing this as a offering to you. I remove that I from the equation. Then it doesn't matter to me whether anybody is happy or not happy with the lecture. Because why? Everything is an offering to the Lord. So whatever action I'm doing, if I bring in this mental attitude that everything is an offering to the Lord, I am serving him and his creation. Because he created everything. He created me, he created this body. What am I doing? I'm serving you and I'm serving your creation. The children are your creation. The world is your creation. What role am I playing? I can only serve your creation. So once that attitude changes, Krishna says, abhyarikshya, you can please the Lord, swakarmana, by the very performance of all your duties and your responsibilities. What happens? Manava vindati siddhi. Manava, a human being, vindati, attains siddhi, perfection. Perfection here means purity of mind, internal purity. So just by the simple performance of knowing that Lord is the origin, he is pervading this whole creation, may you please him through the work, may you please him, worship him through the performance of your duties as an offering to him. Why? As he is everywhere and in everything. So derive your happiness from your work. And this is the very difference between an enlightened person and an ignorant person. The enlightened person works from contentment, from peace, from happiness. An ignorant person works for peace, for happiness, for contentment, searching for that contentment. Until somebody doesn't come and thank you, you are not contented. Whereas a realized person, he is already contented. He doesn't need anybody to come and thank him or criticize him. Because everything becomes an offering to the Lord. So search for that contentment. Don't look for that outside happiness. Because one day somebody will praise you, one day somebody will insult you or criticize you. So he says, offer everything. That offering itself will purify you if you consider every action you are doing for the Lord also. Now, we come to the next verse. Verse 47. Since doing your own duty with the right attitude is the path to perfection, therefore you should never consider any duty as defective. You should never tell yourself, my duty is painful, my duty is terrible, my duty only brings me nothing but pain and sorrow. Once you should not have this attitude. Why? Because you are not doing the duty for yourself. So never look upon your duty as inferior and somebody else's duty as superior. That is the point he wants to make in this verse. He says, Swadharma, the word Swadharma is used in the first line, your own duty which you have taken up according to your. And why do we find ourselves sometimes in a certain situation? Again, through the law of karma, we are put into such a situation. We cannot run away from it sometimes. We are forced to face the situation. And if you think that by running away, you can avoid the situation, you cannot run away from the law of karma. It will come back to you in one way or the other. So take up your duties for dharma, even though they are vigunaha. Vigunaha means they might look to you as defective, as troublesome, as painful duties. Don't consider them that, because duty is duty. You cannot segregate pleasant and unpleasant duty. So, swadharma api vigunaha, it may look, api means even though, it may look vigunaha, defective, imperfect, right? And you find that your duty brings you a lot of torment and anguish, and yet what you do? He says, you compare that to paradharma, somebody else's dharma. You think that somebody else is, that duty looks more enjoyable, more beneficial, more pleasant. Never ever compare your duty with another. Why? Because that person has been given that duty based on his or her own karma. You have been given your duties based on your own karma. Therefore, you cannot compare your duties with the duties of another. So, never ever consider your duty as inferior, because every duty you are doing is burning up your own karma also. So, Shreya means don't consider somebody else's duty more superior. Shreya means more superior, more praiseworthy than your duties. So, never ever compare. Okay? And therefore, do your duty, surrendering everything to the Lord. So, what is telling Arjuna here? You are a Kshatriya. What did Arjuna want to do? Abandon the battlefield and take to life of sannyasa. But Lord Krishna told him, do not ever go and run away and take sannyasa. That is the reason why you have to face this battle, why you have to do your duty. So, don't consider your duty as painful. Okay? And always it looks to us like other people are always enjoying better. Their work seems to be more easier. They seem to be getting all the rewards and all the all the thank yous and all that. It looks to us like we have the most miserable duty, the most miserable work, isn't it? So actually we are all like Arjunas. We are all Arjunas. We are constantly complaining and grumbling about our duties. Why? Because we have brought in that I equation into it. Our troubles start when we bring that I equation into it. The minute we remove that I, you find a completely different attitude to your duties. So, this is what he is saying. Don't ever compare. So, he says now, in verse 47, Kurvan karma, by performing your duties and obligations, as dictated by your swabhava, swabhava niyatam. Niyatam means your daily duties, your duties and obligations fall under niyatam. And it is based on your own swabhava. Okay? When you do your duties according to your own swabhava, according to your nature, taking up all your responsibilities and duties, he says, na apnoti kil visham. Na apnoti means one does not incur any sin, kill visham. Even if you don't do your duty the right way, let's take a simple example of a doctor. If he does an operation and he dedicates his work to Ishwara and the patient dies on the operating table, does that doctor incur any sin? No. So by doing your duties, it may look defective, it may look painful, like a soldier, what Arjuna was saying, I kill on this battlefield, I incur sin. But Krishna is telling him, no, by doing your duty as a Kshatriya, you kill, you do not incur any sin. If you surrender all your actions to the Lord. So if we go back to chapter 2 verse 38, there's a beautiful verse there that explains this whole philosophy. Chapter 2 verse 38. On page, okay, you can look at the English text, page 42. Chapter 2 verse 38. So chapter 2 verse 38, Krishna instructed to Arjuna, treating alike pleasure and pain, do not consider what whether this duty brings me pleasure or this duty brings me pain. Duty is duty that needs to be done. Gain and loss, do I profit from this duty, do I lose from this duty? Victory and defeat, get ready for the fight, then fighting you will not incur any sin. So leave the results in the hands of the Lord. Whatever is to come, we cannot control it totally. What will come as a law of karma will come. So here, not incurring any sin means we don't regress spiritually, we progress spiritually. If we surrender every action to the Lord, we will only progress spiritually. So, by the same token, if you look at it, he is telling Arjuna, you fight this war, you kill, you won't incur any sin. But the Kauravas, what are they fighting for? They are fighting for their own selfish motives. They are the ones who are going to incur sin, not you. You are fighting to protect dharma. You are doing your duty as a soldier to fight and protect dharma. They are fighting only because of their selfish desires. It is they who incur sin, not you, Arjuna. So the attitude itself makes a whole difference itself. Now we come to verse 48. Verse 48. So therefore, knowing that my duty appears as though it is painful, what does Krishna advise? Kaunteya Arjuna, na tyaje karma, don't ever give up your own duty. Even though it is painful, even though you find it difficult to do, don't ever give up your duty. So take up all your duties and responsibilities, which are, and this is the important part, sahajam, to which you are born into. There are duties that we find ourselves thrust into. For example, you are born, you already have a particular set of parents. Can you say you want to change and have different parents? They are your parents, you have a duty to them. And when you get married, you have a set of children. Then what happens? You have a duty towards those children. So some things we find we are thrust into, we are born into. When you marry, you have in-laws also. You have certain relatives that become part of your family. You also have a duty to them also. So certain duties we find that according to our birth, we do take up by a certain environment we come into. So sahajam, we are born into those kind of duties. And even though we find it sadosam, sadosam means we find it faulty, we find it troublesome, we find it difficult, he says don't ever run away from them. Okay? And he says here, because sarva arambaha, any action, whatever we do, has got some form of defect, dosena. Sarva arambaha, any undertaking we do, no matter what we try to do, there is some inherent defect in it. Now, what do we mean by some defects? See, even when we do havan yajna, we are offering to the Lord, we are doing a fire yajna. We are chopping down trees to do the fire yajna. Isn't that also something wrong? You are taking from the environment, you are cutting down trees, putting them into the fire and burning it up. So whatever we do, there is bound to be some defect in the duty. Insects also fall into the fire, they get burnt up by the fire. Isn't that also a papam? So whatever we do, there is bound to be some defect in the duty. But as long as we are doing the duty as an offering to Ishvara, there is no sin, there is no papam at all in the record. So he says there is no perfect duty. So what is it that makes your duty perfect? It is your attitude. There is no perfect duty, it is your attitude that makes the duty perfect. So don't change the duty, change the attitude. And that's why sometimes we see that Swamijis, we find, we think that they lead the most comfortable life, isn't it? We see they have nothing else to do. Just come here, give lecture, go back. Eat food, go to sleep. But what time you don't realize what time that Swamiji has got to wake up? 4 o'clock in the morning. Read the scriptures, chant the mantras, then go into seva to help people, spread the knowledge, sleep early by 8-9 o'clock, go to bed, no TV, no cinema, wearing the same clothes every day. It appears to us that that person's duty is easy, but you try to take up that duty, you won't last 1 week also in the ashram. It's not easy, right? So we have our own duties according to our own environment that we are born in, according to our own nature. What he is telling you, convert that duty into worship. Then there is no more torment, there is no more conflict in your mind. So he says, he gives an example here, all duties are defective, and he gives a practical example. Eva apnir dhumena, just like every fire, there is smoke. Wherever you burn, whatever type of fire, whether it is a little spark, whether it is a blazing fire, every fire, as they say, there is no smoke without fire. So just like every fire has smoke, every duty there is some form of defect. They will bring you some form of torment, some conflict, some pain, some disturbance will be there. But because of that, we should not run away from the duty at all. So we have to be persistent and keep on performing our duties. Now, what happens when one follows this attitude of surrendering all our actions to the Lord and accepting everything as Ishvara Prasadam? So up to verse 48, what he has explained from verse 46, 47, 48 is basically the Karma Yoga life. He summarized in a nutshell how to convert our duties and responsibilities as a form of Karma Yoga, as an offering, as a worship to the Lord. Now from verse 49, he will explain what is the result of leading such a kind of lifestyle also. Okay? So in verse 49, he says, buddhi asaktaha, one whose intellect, buddhi, becomes unattached. To what? Sarvatra, to everything. Now what do we mean by everything? It means who becomes unattached to external factors. Whatever happens as a result of our duty, you don't judge your progress based on... You see, a spiritual person does not base his success in life according to possessions or what we call external situations. As long as we are a spiritual person, we never base our progress in life according to how many cars I have, how many houses I have, what is my bank balance. So here sarvatra means one is not attached to external changing situations. Asaktaha, the buddhi is unattached to, is not attached to external changing situations. That means you don't get agitated by whatever you have or whatever you don't have. Our biggest problem is we keep on measuring our success by external material situation. What I have and what I don't have. And then our biggest problem is comparing what we have with what the others have. Right. So as I said earlier, everybody, there is a saying in Hindi, I don't know how to translate it. They say every bit of food has the person's name written on it. What food is supposed to come to you will come to you. That food is reserved for you, you will get that food. If you are not, what do you say? Every grain, right, has a human being's name written on it. That grain, dhani, what?
Dhani,
kani, wali, kana. Kana, yeah. Every grain has the name of that person written on it. What is to come to you will come to you. Nobody can take that away from you. So you don't have to look at your progress on the externals, on what you have and what you don't have. Being a spiritual person, there are certain other factors which we should look at our progress. And what are those factors? We will come next week and discuss from this verse number 49. Okay, and with a prayer.
Vasudeva sutam devam kansa chanura mardanam devaki paramanandam krishna vande jagadguru.
Thank you. Hari Om.
No worries.
I wanted to ask you, see, our duty.